So I didn't mention during the presentation that my background is physics. So my master, I did. I was experimentalist during my undergraduate studies, and I was working in biophysics. And after that, I did my PhD in statistical mechanics. So as a working statistical with statistical physics, you can contribute for biology, like Nigel Goldenfeld mentioned the other day. And this talk is going to be a little bit different because I'm going to talk about space and time situations related to the tuberculosis. And especially I'm going to focus on the dynamics inter-host and intra-host. So in Wednesday, when Santiago was doing this summary of the 3 weeks of viral subject, he mentioned the need of spatial and time models. So this is more or less what I do. And the reason that I came is that now I want to improve the models by including the side of evolution of the pathogen that I have never included, but I have always included the dynamical aspects, and this more or less in an indirect way. So as you see, tuberculosis is a very old disease on the population, and it's well mentioned in poetry. And I divide, this is the outline of my talk. I'm going to do the following. I'm going to give an introduction about tuberculosis, worldwide etiological agent, transmission and diagnosis, and how it's important, this kind of things, when I study the spread of the diseases in the population. Then I'm going to talk about the immune response to TB, which is the granuloma formation that I'm going to explain a little bit better later on. And I'm going to finish by mentioning a few aspects that I could collect in these days about the evolutionary aspects of mycobacteria tuberculosis. So as a physicist, I start by talking about people that have worked on this, because if I have to finish, I cannot. So Alan is the guy that did most of the work I'm going to talk about during his PhD thesis. Now he's a professor in physics department in Minas Gerais. And these are two collaborators from Argentina. Silvina is the head of the group. Anna was the PhD student that came to work with me for 6 months. And these people, which we collaborated, they are from the medical school, and they also belong, as you see, there is a special TB tuberculosis research center that is running by Célio Silva. And Antonio Rufino was the president of the National Network in Tuberculosis. Vanya is a immunologist, and Carlos was a postdoc and is a medical doctor. And there is also these people that have collaborated, mostly giving us data, and they belong to Foundation Oswaldo Cruz, which is the main center in main research center in infectious and tropical diseases in Brazil. So the earliest detection of tuberculosis was in the Neolithic era. And this was discovered in Israel a few years ago. And the important thing about tuberculosis, I mention this kind of thing because today tuberculosis is one of the worst situations on the population that you have been since the beginning. Is the worst situation. So you see that in the 19th and 18th century in Europe, it infects nearly 100% of the population. And you have 25% of all adults' deaths were caused by tuberculosis. So it's a serious health problem. And you have the main dates are 1882, which discovered of the mycobacteria tuberculosis, also known by Koch bacilli. And The other date that is important is that in 1906, you have the development of the first vaccine, which is the BCG. And you see that it was developed in 1906, but it was first used in humans in 1921, and only after the World War II, it becomes to be accepted on the population and used in Europe. And then you have the treatment and cure of tuberculosis that was with the development of the antibiotic streptomycin. So before that, the only treatment was sanatoria and some surgical interventions. So this is more or less the situation. And what's the situation worldwide today? And you see that 1/3 of the population is infected, but this number is increasing because of HIV correlation with tuberculosis. And each year you have 90 million new cases and the order of 2 or 3 million deaths TB related. Which means that also here you count the people infected with HIV that died from tuberculosis. There is a combination that is, and these are some of the data. You see that in Africa, you can, this is the number of infected people per 100,000 inhabitants, and you see that in Africa, you can, this can vary from 1,200 to 22, and you see that in India is the order of 170, and then you have the in Russia, you have 110, Brazil is 46, and Portugal and Japan 30, 22, and the best rates that you see is Germany, France, Italy, and.
Sorry, but there are many inhabitants who carry the infection, but
sorry?
It's not active, right?
I'm going to talk about this. If you wait a moment, I'm only talking about statistics for the moment. Okay. So these are the distribution of percentage of multi-drug resistance among the reported case. So you see the darkest yellow is higher than 6% of the number of TB reported cases that are multi-drug resistant. And the light yellow, it's less than 3%. And the white part, you don't see this multi-drug resistance. So I'm going to give you a little bit of idea about what is, how.
May I ask one more question? It seems that there are more multi-drug resistance in the countries where there is more incidence, right? More infections.
Not in Africa. There is very large. If you look here, sorry. If you look, Africa is very and. It's for this region, it's, you are right. But then here, you do not have this kind of connection.
South America, the South America is also more infections.
Here you have between 3%, between 3% and 6%.
But this is because misuse of antibiotics or something like this?
I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to say that you have two kinds of, you have the multi-resistant, and you have another kind which is resistant to all kinds of antibiotics, which is now becoming very important. And the multi-drug resistant, they are resistant for the two most used antibiotics that you use. And this is what you say. It's not clear the reason. You have, for instance, what I'm going to talk about Brazil in one town that's very close where I live. And it might be related to the fact, for instance, if the person is alcoholic and don't take the treatment, seriously, it can become resistant. It can become resistant because, and if there is a transmission of a multi-resistant one, and then you use the drug, then the guy becomes more resistant and it becomes more complicated. But you see that the number of cases is still low. but they are wondering what's going to be the impact on that on the population. And the, in principle, what you are going to see is that it's not that important. And as far as I could read about the mycobacteria, it's not going to become a pandemic situation with multi-resistant, because you have, there is an interplay between the mutation that you have to become resistant and the cost in the fitness. So more or less you have this, and this is more or less, the, there is only few studies about this. It's amazing because mycobacteria is a very serious problem, and there are only few studies about this and genomics, but the first results indicate that it's not going to become pandemic. You are going to, but however, you are not, what I do believe after having been studying this for a long time is that this is a multifactorial disease, and you are not going to eliminate from the population. This is why it's still there and it's going to continue there. However, since you have HIV now, that you, the same kind of cells are used for the response or for to control the HIV and to respond to the mycobacteria. So if you have if the person is affected by both, then it's a dead combination. So one other thing that is very important is that when the person is HIV infected and acquires tuberculosis, the tuberculosis is spread all over the body. It doesn't stay in the lungs. So it becomes more, the person transmit more easily than in the other cases. So this is the situation with tuberculosis. So the mycobacteria is caused by, is also known by Koch bacillus, and it's transmitted primarily via respiratory route. It infects mainly the lungs, but can spread to other organs. But this is not common, this. It is very common in HIV co-infected patients. So it's a gram-resistant bacteria, which means that walks cells walls. And this is what make the mycobacteria become resistant to the drugs. It's non-motile and rod-shaped, and grows most successfully in tissues with a high oxygen content like lungs. So this is the characteristics. It's an intercellular pathogen, usually affecting mononuclear phagocytes like macrophages. Has a slow growing with a generation time of 12 to 18 hours. This can may vary, because I also see between 15 and 20 hours. And they always compare it to Escherichia coli, which takes the order of 20 or 30 minutes. So it's a very slow growing rate compared to Escherichia coli. It's hydrophobic, it's a high lipid content in the cell wall. And this is it's very, it doesn't accept easily the dyes. And you can only use dyes with phenol. And since it resists to the colorization with acid via organic solvents, it's named acid fast bacilli. So the transmission happens, people suffering from active pulmonary TB, actually you have 8 clinical stages. So, and only 2 of them transmit the disease. But if the person is active, has the active tuberculosis, when she or he cough or sneeze or speak or spit, spell infectious aerosols droplets. And these droplets contain many bacteria. So in order, when a single sneeze, you can release the order of 40,000 droplets, which means that you can infect the entire environment around the person that is infected. It can, he or she can infect all the environment. And if there is someone who is immunodepressed, it can become infected with TB. And as you mentioned, you have only 10% of the infected people develop the disease. 5% is a fast in 1 year, 3% in 3 years, and the rest during their lifetime. So this is why they call multifactorial disease, because it is actually, it's not that it's latent, in the sense that it's latent and the person can become infected and activate the disease many years later, and this can contaminate and you cannot control this kind of things. Now, with the cohort studies, since they are studying, they are really measuring the R0 parameter, which means one person, how many people one person infects. They are going to have an idea about the dynamics of transmission and maybe keep track of this during the lifetime of someone that had contact with someone that was infected.
May I ask a question? You have not spoken about this yet, but when I look at this map, for example, we have a high rate of HIV in Africa.
Yeah.
So we have high rate of HIV in Russia and East Europe.
Yeah.
And in the Western Europe, we have a high rate of HIV in Portugal, for example. Is there any correlation in the transmission of tuberculosis?
It's not clear for the moment yet. It's clear that there is a correlation, but it was not yet quantified. It's not clear. It's a very complicated.
Reason comes from because there is also high rate of HIV, just because there are more people infected, just transmitting
this. I didn't understand your question. There is no.
No.
It was not quantified. There is a correlation between both, but they do not know exactly how it works. This is what I'm saying. Of course, there is a correlation because you see that you have HIV infected people. But in Africa, it's very difficult to study. These people doesn't. There are many trials that I've been doing there. They have other kind of disease that also use this CD4 T cells, which are very important for the response in tuberculosis. So it's very. So the diagnosis is done by using this positive tuberculin skin test, Mantoux test, or X-rays, or examination of sputum. About the vaccines, BCG is protective for pediatric purpose, but it's unreliable against adult pulmonary TB. So this is one question. Now in India, they are using, they are trying to vaccine the population twice during the lifetime, and it seems that in some cases it helps a lot. So there are more cases of TB on the planet than at any other time in history. This is the situation now. There is a urgent need for a newer and more effective vaccine, and they are looking for a therapeutic vaccine actually, because then you can use to cure the TB and also to vaccine. So there are several new vaccines to prevent TB, and there is this recombinant tuberculosis vaccine that was started, the trials started in 2004 by NIH. And there is also, they have also, it has also been shown that the DNA TB vaccine associated with the conventional chemotherapy can accelerate the disappearance of mycobacteria tuberculosis. So this is more or less the idea of the recombinant vaccine. What you do, you want to expand the antigenic specific T cells, which means that if you burst the T cell response, then you can eliminate easily the mycobacteria. The role of the CD4 T cells is to produce the gamma interferon that are going to activate the macrophage to become more efficient in killing the bacteria. So this is why they want to burst this, and I'm going to come back to this later on. So the treatment of TB, they use antibiotics to kill the bacteria, and there are two antibiotics that are commonly used, there's isoniazid and rifampicin. And the problem with tuberculosis is that you have to associate different kinds of antibiotics, and then you have a very long period of treatment, at least 6 months. And this is the problem that people become resistant, because after 2 weeks taking the antibiotics, they feel quite well. So after 2 months, they are fed up to taking the medicine. In Brazil, for instance, they have to go to the national health agents to get the drug. So this is one of the reasons that it's the very long periods of treatment are really something very annoying with respect to the tuberculosis. And the drug-resistant tuberculosis is transmitted the same way as the regular one, and the primary resistance, what they call, is in person infected with a resistant strain of TB, and the patient which was fully susceptible to TB develops a secondary resistance, which is the acquired resistance during TB therapy because inadequate treatment. Yes.
So resistance, is it on a single cell level, or is it a quality effect? If you take a single cell and from a resistant individual and try to attack it with antibiotics, would it die? Or is it really because of the clamping, because of the biofilm or whatever?
I don't know if I understood your question. You are asking about the one. I'm not very used to this kind of experiments, one cell. I know more about the population level and the individual level. But what I'm asking is that if at a single level.
Yeah, so what I'm asking is basically, so there are multiple ways how you can see of resistance evolving. Or,
yeah.
The first one is basically something evolving, right?
Yeah.
Or is the cell switching or trying to start doing something else? Or maybe if you have a colony, basically the outside shell of the cell dies and forms the protective layer. And
yeah.
Then internals are still the same cells, they haven't changed at all, but there is now no access to antibiotics to the internal sort of core of the colony.
As right? far as I could read during this period about this, what happens is the wall is a key factor that makes this mycobacteria very resistant to drugs. So the drugs should attack very specific genes. Okay, so this is the way they say. So if you do this if you can use it for one single cell, you use the right one, then you can modify. But then the mycobacteria is going to adapt, to try to mutate, to control the action of this. I'm going to summarize a little bit about what I have read about this kind of experiments with mycobacteria in the end of the talk. Okay.
But I think it must be a genetic mechanism because it's always it's transmitted, right? If you're infected with TB from someone mm-hmm. who has resistance, you will also have resistant TB.
This is not what they say. They say that if you get this is the problem. If you are infected by a multi-resistant and you are not treated with the drugs, the two drugs, then you can eliminate the bacteria. The problem is that you don't know which kind of strain the person is infected with. So if the person is infected with this drug resistant,
yeah.
And you treat it with the, for instance, the this isoniazid something and
yeah.
I'm not used to this the names, so then the bacteria become more resistant, and then you have to submit the person to another treatment that is much more complicated and longer.
But resistance can go from one mutation
yeah.
to another.
Yeah,
it's a single mutation, yeah.
Yes, it can.
It's
not clear.
It's a genetic switch, it's a mutation.
Mutation.
Yeah. It depends. They say that there is
one step change in the ribosomal gene, you're resistant. It's absolutely
yeah.
Followed by the genome.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So, but there's some of them, they used to say that there is no cost, and some of it's not clear. How it works when you pass with this mutant to another person. the evidence that they got until now is that seems that it's not going to be pandemic, because it's if you do not treat with the drug, it's more easy to be eliminated.
Yeah, but that is
okay. So it's
that's fine.
Okay. So another strategy that they have adopted is DOTS, which is the Directly Observed Treatment Short Course, which was developed in India. And the idea is to send a health agent to follow the person that is being treated to ensure that he's not going to abandon treatment. So it's more or less like this, which is very expensive, very complicated, because then you have to have people working on this, and it's I'm going to talk about this when I talk about epidemics. So from the point of view of epidemiology, what is important is that when the person gets infected, there are three types of outcomes: elimination, contention, or dissemination of the bacteria inside the body. And there are eight clinical stages that you might think that you can reduce this to three, but it's not obvious, because actually you have different rates of transition between these clinical states. So I think I finished the first part of that, talking about TB in a more general way, and now I'm going to talk about the work that we have done related to the population in Olinda, which is a town, this is Pernambuco, for those that don't know it, this is Recife, and Olinda is very close to Recife. So, in Brazil, we have 14 million people infected. This is the third country among the 22 that concentrate 8% of the cases worldwide. And you have 100,000 new cases per year. This is the average. And 5,000, 6,000 deaths per year, too.
About 20% of population? About 20% of population? What's the total number of people infected?
You have
what's the total population?
The population to 200 million. So it's this is why it's the second one. The rate, you see, that was the average rate was 46 per 100,000. But here, what you have is and this is the case of Olinda. Olinda has the number of TB cases per year in Olinda is higher than Brazil average and also Pernambuco average. So it's a very complicated area. And here you have the, okay. So here you have the incidence in Brazil, and this is the incidence in Pernambuco. Here you have this mortality rate in Brazil, and here you have in Pernambuco, and Olinda is higher than the average of Pernambuco, so it's complicated. So, and the important time scales related to the disease concern its epidemiological aspects, that what I mentioned before, that 10% of the infected population develop the disease, 5% in 1 year, 3% in 3 years, 2% during their lifetime. So, and if you have to think about the outcome of the complex situations, which means the complicated cases, the outcome is going to be cure or death after 5 years. Either the person cure, either they die. So this was the situation. We got this information about the new cases of TB in Olinda. This is the map of Olinda, divided in polygons, which means the census tract. This is when you do the census in the country, you divide the town in small polygons, and each polygon contains 1,200 people or 300 domiciles. And we got this two set of data, one going from 1991 to 1995, and another one 1996 to 2000. I'm going to talk more about this one, but the results are very similar. And of course, they are georeferenced with different situations, because this set is georeferenced with respect to the division of the census in 1990. And this one is georeferenced with respect to the division of census tract of 2000. So you cannot put them together. So it's the way we can do this in physics it's not interesting for the epidemiologist. So it's better to analyze separately. So the general treatment of this data doing by the statisticians is like that. What they do is they calculate the probability density function. So they determine the high risk regions. So as I was saying to you, it's very important to treat. If you go to apply this DOTS, it's better to know which kind of, in which region are you going to act in a very intensive way. Here, if I say that this is the risky region, you have the order of 20 or 25 census tract here. So it's very complicated to send the health agents over there to control this kind of situation. But then this is the probability density function for the number of cases. So they accumulate the number of cases in the 5 years, and they calculate the distribution of probability. So, and then they compare with other data related to the census, which is the density of low incoming and density of low schooling, density of household density, and things like that. So this is more or less a distribution. If you remember, this is the density of cases. So you see that it relates to the low incoming, low instruction, and low schooling, and also there is a marginal relation between them and the high density household. So these were the data we had, and as a physicist, when we look at this, you say there is a percolation of the information.
Yeah, Kurt, how do you define a case?
New cases are reported. In Brazil, the only way the person to be treated, they have to report to the health agents to get the treatment. And they are more or less controlled. So these are the reported cases. The new cases that I mentioned are the reported one. And thank you for the question, because actually you have here, what you have georeferenced there is 85% of the reported case, because actually, since you have a lot of, the distribution of people in town is changing, and you have a lot of slums that start. So some of the data, you could not localize the person or georeference the case. So this is, thank you. It was not your question, please. No.
Yeah, well, in the U.S., it seems like carriers are also treated. So
sorry?
Yeah, people who carry tuberculosis are treated as well if they're identified through screening.
Yeah.
Is that also considered a case?
Yeah, these are the people that were identified and they are being treated.
So it's people who have clinical symptoms or clinical
people
symptoms?
That were diagnosed by sputum smear positive, Mantu test, and things like an X-ray. Because they go and then you do the first skin test, and if it's positive or not, if there is also the clinical details, then you send for the next examination. It's very well controlled in Brazil, this. Okay?
Thanks.
This is an HIV. So when we look at the data, we said, well, there is a percolation of information. And if you connect here, you can think about the census tract determining this is the geographical center of each census tract. And if you connect this geographical center by a connection, you do this by considering, I connect all the census tracts that have at least one case per year. And this is the pass, what we call the etiological pass in that year. So if you do this, I'm going to show the data for, this is 1996. I'm not in a good position here. This is 1996, 1997, 98, 99, and 2000. And then you can create a network. And then for the physicist, I'm going to mention the analysis of the network that was done only giving the results for those which are interested. I can discuss later. So you see this kind of, that indeed there is a percolation, but it's a dynamical percolation in time. What you see here, you have some kind, you have a connection, but then in the next year, you have a hole here, there is a hole here, but then you have a connection in the next year, so you have a dynamical percolation. So the question is, if you look at the problem, like percolation, the question is, what is the backbone behind this? Can we determine the backbone that sustained the infection or not? And if you, then I, if you think in percolation, you would eliminate all the dangling bones. But however, the dangling bones here represent some social relationship, so you cannot eliminate them. So the idea we had, it was to use the characteristic time scales of the disease to find which the backbone or the source of the infection in the town. So this was what we did. We could not eliminate the dangling bones, so we used the first data that I showed you, that is 5 years, is the necessary time scale that you have for to have the outcome of complicated cases. So we looked for all the census tract that have cases during the 5 consecutive years. And then we found this 53 census tract. And then the idea was we compared this with the data from the epidemiologist. To the epidemiologist, what they consider is that the risk census tract are those that have more than one case per family, or cases that census tract that will have retreatment. So if you compare, you see that there is some overlap, but if you they do not coincide all the time. So here, the advantage of this is that you can send the health agent to the place, exactly. And then it can follow this region very closely and in a very sharp way to control the disease. So now, I'm comparing this, the density of cases, with this, our results for the 53 sources of infection or high burden census tract, and then you see that there is, you eliminate a lot of census tract, so it's more easy to. And the advantage of our method too is that we use raw data. We do not filter the data. The statisticians, they use to filter the data before to do this probability density function. So here, when you compare with the low income, you see that there is some relation with low income, low schooling. And there is, what you see is the household's density make the connection between the source of infection. This is the, because this is a region that you have a lot of slums. So this is connect the source of infection.
Can you connect this to genotypic data from the
bacteria? this is what I want to say. You can study the dynamics of the disease, you can model this, and you also, now you are able to identify the strains that are related, because this region here are very poor regions, and you don't have sanitation. So you can study the kind of strain that you see. So you connect the people that have not a very good quality of life and the environment to the strain. Which this is the nice thing. This is why I'm here now, because I want to learn more about it.
Do you have collected strains from these experiments? Do you have isolates?
Now this is the point. Now it becomes politics, because then you can, you go to the government. So you have to convince, and you are in negotiation to do this. Okay?
The paper just came out in New England Journal of Medicine. They followed a TB. What they thought was one outbreak in British Columbia, Canada, turned out there was two concurrent outbreaks going on.
Okay.
So you could have,
yeah,
you could actually have four outbreaks.
Exactly. This is what we want to do, but it's quite complicated. So if you compare now, this is a summary of what I have told you before, so let's skip this. And this is, I'm showing now, this, it's going, so you see this is the path that we have determined before, and now you are showing this source of infection. So you see that this path always are connecting this source of infection. You see here, you have. So the question, the second question is that how the epidemic process is maintained, because if you have a source of infection, who is feeding this source of infection? So then we took the second time scale here, that in 10% of infected people, 5% evolved, developed the disease in 1 year. So we studied the we looked for all census tracts that had been infected during 2 consecutive years. So here you have 97, 99, 99, 99, 2000. And then this is the network. So you have a subnetwork that feeds the source of infection. And if you count the number of cases, for the source of infection, the number of cases per source of, per census tract is more, greater than 10. And in this case here, the number, the average number of cases per census tract that belong to the subnetwork is 5 cases, more greater than 5. And if you compare now with the density of household, you see that this is described exactly by this subnetwork. And this was very nice because the epidemiologist was trying to make the connection with the household density, and they could not. So this make clear that there is a strong relationship, and that tuberculosis related to this very long contact. And with this, we could also analyze the movement of the disease. So this work was published in PLOS in November last year. So here you see the movement around the fossae, this source of infection. I'm going to show this. So you see there is always cases around, okay? And here I'm going to look for the movement between the source of infection. So you see that they connect also. You see? This is in between them. So what I look is that which I consider the source, which are the neighbors of the source in the next year that are infected, and the neighbors of these neighbors that were infected in the next year. So this is what we could figure out about the movement. Sorry.
It makes sense, but how do you decide the source?
I didn't decide. I used some characteristic time scale of the disease to characterize the source of infection. Then I checked with the criteria used by the epidemiologist.
There is a good correlation?
There is a good correlation, in much more, it's more specific than the case that they consider. Okay? These people that have worked together, they are all epidemiologists, pneumologists and people that are study a lot of tuberculosis. So one thing that was interesting from the point of the social point of view is that, as I told you, all the census tract of fossae or source of infection, they are related to low schooling, low income. But you have also other census tract that are related to this. And Fatima said, look at the women. And then we found out that in the source of infection, you have 8% is the number of women, head of family, with low schooling and less than one minimum wage is 8% higher than the other ones, which means that education is very important to control tuberculosis. It doesn't mean that people that have to go to school, but you can do some play that explain how it works, because any mother that understand that how tuberculosis can be transmitted can prevent the child to be infected. And the one of the biggest problem in Olinda is with alcoholism. It's because the father in general, or even the mother, drinks a lot and do not pay attention and contaminate the children like this. This is so, as I said, knowing the high burden cities, we are able to better allocate budgets, drug distribution, recruitment of human skilled resources to control the diseases, as well design vaccine programs, and but the best thing is that we can analyze the strains and understand, make a correlation between the kind of quality of life and environment related to the strain. And also this sanitation, everything. Because if you look at the data of census, it's not clear. It's not related, and this is impossible. Everybody knows that this is impossible. So it's...
I have a question. So I don't know how big this city is, but do you assume that everybody that is infected in their own neighborhood?
Yeah.
Because you could also, like, if you go to school in the next neighborhood, you might get it there, right?
Thank you for the question. I forgot to say. The neighborhood I'm defining is all the census tracts that are, have one side of the polygon in common. We have changed this for some kind of, this is a hill. It's a very hot region in Brazil. So people do not go walk 3 kilometers to buy food. They stay around. You have very strict neighborhood, not only because of that, but because of the structure of the hill. So there is some place that they are disconnected from the others. So it's a very, it's very localized. Moreover, most of the people are very poor. So they do not have jobs that they go far away. In general, they do small things around. This is why, okay, thank you for the question. I'm going to skip this because I want to talk about the other one. And but I'm going to summarize what we have analyzed. We have analyzed this this topological network that we extract. It's a small network, small word network, as you can see. And we figure out that, but then if you consider the number of cases per node and you analyze this distribution, that we had to do some reverse engineering, because actually you have all the analysis that you can do is based on the weights on the links between two nodes, and actually what we have here is the weight in the nodes. So we did the reverse engineering, we defined different kinds ways to define the link, and then we realized that the distribution is scale free, okay? For those which are interested, I can talk more about this later on. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to jump from the population to inside the immune response. So the immune response to the mycobacteria is the formation of granuloma. What is the granuloma? It's a shield of cells that is formed around the infected macrophages. The idea is to isolate this from the body. So it becomes isolated. So you have three outcomes when you have the infection of either you eliminate, as I mentioned, contention, which is related to granuloma, and you have also this dissemination. So what you have here, you have the mycobacteria, the person inhaled the mycobacteria, it goes to the lungs, and then the alveolar macrophages are going to capture those mycobacteria. In 90% of the case, they are going to eliminate the mycobacteria, but in the case it does not eliminate, then the bacteria is going to proliferate inside the macrophage, and afterwards, by necrosis, the cell dies and the new bacteria are released on the lungs. So these are the outcomes. So you have this elimination, you have the contention, the formation of the granuloma, and then you have this, it is what they call latent tuberculosis. So what happens inside the immune system? So I'm not going to the details, but you know that macrophages is the innate immune response, so it's the first cell that responds to an infection. So the macrophages capture the bacteria, and then once it is infected, it starts to produce TNF-alpha. TNF-alpha are going to activate the expression of chemokines. And those chemokines are going to attract other kinds of cells, and you are going to have this kind of structure. So you are going to isolate it, the structure of cells, isolate the infected macrophage from the rest of the body. So in the first stage, what you have is the alveolar macrophage infection, and signaling of cytokines and chemokines, and the final stage, what you have is the formation of granuloma. So the idea is to describe the formation of granuloma. So we spent some time discussing about this with these people, the immunologists, but then we found this work of Joanne Flynn from University of Pennsylvania, and she claims that actually to explain the existence of granuloma, what you need is only the macrophages, the T cells, and the TNF-alpha gamma interferon produced by the T cells and the chemokines. This is the idea of her. And we test this hypothesis. The idea was to test this hypothesis because when we were discussing, there was five or six types of cells involved. You have all kinds of cytokines. You can have whatever you want. And in order to model, we have to look for the main cells and the main cytokines and chemokines that are going to be important to describe the formation of a granuloma. So, so the idea of Joanne Flynn is the following. So you have the infected macrophages that are going to produce the TNF-alpha that are going to activate the production of chemokines. The chemokines are going to attract new alveolar macrophages. And after a certain time, you have the immune response that are going to, some T cells are going to show up in the site of infection, and they are going to produce gamma interferon that are going to activate the infected macrophage. This is crucial because when the gamma interferon activates the infected macrophage, if the macrophage was not able to kill the bacteria, it becomes able. So this is the feedback mechanism that you have that helps the bacteria. So in our model, what we consider is that the alveolar macrophages, the T cells, TNF-alpha, gamma interferon, and the chemokines. We do not differentiate between the chemokines because you see you have CCL2, CCL3, CCL4, like a physicist we summarize by one kind of chemokine. So we consider the lung is a square lattice. We are going to, each site can be occupied by one alveolar macrophage or a CT4 T cells, bacteria, and then we consider the expression of chemokines below and cytokines. So for the signaling, what you consider is the production, the degradation and diffusion of these chemokines and cytokines. We have the cell motion, and this, here you have the cell, it can move for one of the eight neighbors sites, but then you calculate the probability to move to each one of them, relates to the concentration of some chemokine in the site in relation to the sum of the concentrations of the sites. So then you decide which is the probability, then you throw your random generate and you can move or not. This is the idea here. So, and the rules are the following. If you have the bacteria and you have the macrophage once it phagocytes one microbacteria, it do not move anymore. It engulfs one bacterium at each time step and kills with probability, with certain probability, which is 90%, as I mentioned before. If it does not kill the bacterium, it becomes an infected macrophage, the bacteria start to proliferate inside, and it starts to produce the TNF-alpha that you activate its own chemokine expression. No infected macrophage, if it occupies a site which is, there is a concentration of TNF-alpha, it also becomes it also starts to express the chemokines. So then you have the macrophage activation. If you have an infected macrophage and you have a T cell producing gamma interferon, then you are going to improve the ability of the macrophage to kill bacteria. Okay? And then you have the growth of intracellular bacteria. And this was a funny situation because then I asked one of the immunologists, when you have a macrophage that is infected, how many bacteria it's going to reproduce inside before there is a release or there is a necrosis? And the answer was, good question. So we went to the literature, we found some electromicrograph of macrophage, and we count. And we estimated it was 28. Now there is experiments that show that's 32, the average. So the way you solve the problem. And then you have other kinds of rules. You have additional macrophages that are recruited whenever the chemokine concentration on the lattice achieves a certain threshold. After the time necessary to generate the cell-mediated response, T1 cells enter the system at each time step, and then you have the death of the cells and the production of gamma interferon by the T cells and everything. So I'm going to, this is the idea. So what we have, I think it was 15 parameters, and from the 15, almost 10 we can estimate from the literature. So we have to analyze more or less this threshold. And this one, the threshold of gamma interferon is very important because actually it activates the macrophages. And when you see, this is arbitrary units. If you have this threshold in the unitary threshold like this, you have this, in 12% of the case you have elimination, and in 88% you have the contention. If you increase by one order of magnitude, then you have the same kind of things, but when, if by two orders of magnitude, then you change. You start to have this kind of elimination, but now you don't have contention anymore. What you have is dissemination. Since you are using cellular automata, we allowed for fluctuations. We can describe all kinds of behavior. So you have the elimination. I have some moves for those which are interested in see this. So then you count the number of bacteria. Then you see these extracellular bacteria are in yellow. The black ones are the internal intracellular bacteria. And then you see this is the, you have this macrophages in the beginning of the simulation in a random walk. When they find the bacteria, they start to signaling, and then you have the formation. But in this case, you eliminate the bacteria, so you have the solution of the granuloma. If you look at the behavior of the T cells, you, this is the T cells in blue. In green, you have the macrophages that are not infected. And this one are the infected macrophages. The funny thing here is that we could predict the expression of chemokines, which is impossible to do at the lab. So this was one of the achievements of this work. So we could estimate, predict the expression profile of the chemokines and the cytokines. And this, now they are doing some experiments in the granuloma. They are marking and verifying if we can confirm this kind of behavior. So this is the case of the containment. You start in the same way, but in this case, you do not eliminate the bacteria. As you see here, you always have extracellular bacteria and also intracellular bacteria. And then you have here, you have healthy macrophages. These are the T cells and infected macrophages. You always have this here. And when the bacteria start to split, then you can now split this in two granulomas. And this is exactly what happens in mice. You also, in this case, you see that, chemokines can, you don't need the adhesion molecules, everything to explain this. You can explain only by chemokines. And these are the profiles. And then you have the dissemination. In the case of the dissemination, you do not control the growth of the bacteria, then you have the spread of the infection. What you see here is a continuous increase of the extracellular bacteria. This is the number of internal bacteria. And this is the infected, non-infected macrophage, the T cells, and the infected macrophages in red. And also, in this case, you have the profile. So this was nice, and then it was the thesis of Alain, and I said, listen, this is very nice, and we can reproduce the kind of behavior observed in nature, but we have to validate the model. In order to validate the model, we compared to some experimental results, also obtained with these collaborators of John Flynn, and Here you have, they are measuring the number viable bacteria in the granuloma formation, during the granuloma formation. What they do, they kill the different mice in different days, they infect all the same time, and then they kill in different days, and then they count. Here you have 4 mice. And here is the average over 50 simulations. And you see that is a very good qualitative agreement, but quantitative, no, because you have one order of magnitude less than this one. And the, so this was something that we were wondering why. So what we did here, there was a difference in the way we are doing. So here we are doing, this is the way we are averaging over 44 samples, and we are averaging the same way. But then here, we reproduce what you do in mice. So you run lots of simulations, and you take 4 of them and calculate the average for the first day. Then you take other 4 to calculate for the second day. And then this is the result. You see that it's much more similar to what you have been observed qualitatively. And the reason, because there is no agreement in the quantitative way, is because when you infect the mice, in general, you have 7 or 10 granuloma per lung. And here, we are simulating only 1. So if you now, you rescale this, then you see here is the experimental result. I'm rescaling the average that we did for 44 samples, and this is the 4 sample. Here was the 4 sample. Without rescaling, here is rescaling. This is for the case where we reproduce the way the experiment was done. So the difference that we obtain from the numbers in simulation experiments is due to the fact that in actually the experimental results, you are dealing with a higher number of granuloma, and we are controlling and simulating only 1 granuloma per lung. And this is the result for the T cells. You see that you also have a very good qualitative agreement, but no, it's not the case for the quantitative agreement, and the reason is the same. So it's this model. Then other parameters is the, here I mentioned the gamma interferon threshold, and here I'm talking about the replication time of the bacteria. If I vary, how it changes, and this is the probability of the macrophage to kill bacteria, to see. So there is all this study of the parameter space, and what you have seen is that the TNF-alpha threshold is very important on the granuloma formation and containment. The lack of this cytokine leads to the granuloma fragmentation, which is also observed experimentally. Greater the delay on the generation of the immune response, a specific immune response, smaller the probability of the elimination of the mycobacteria tuberculosis, greater the replication time of the bacteria, or the intracellular bacteria, smaller the probability of elimination. Which means that you see that Escherichia coli is 20 minutes, and this one is. So now, as I told you, we observed the 3 behaviors observed in nature, and we are now including more cells. But what we really want is now to take into account some evolutionary aspects of the bacteria in order to simulate and see what's going. And why? Because the preliminary results where we include more cells do not explain other kinds of behaviors. So probably it's related to the evolution of the mycobacteria. So, as you see, I have used, during the simulations, I use a lot of data about the mycobacteria, but there are more data that I can use for next studies. So we have used the time, the division time of the mycobacteria in the simulation that I mentioned before. This is something that I didn't mention, is that the bacilli can survive in a dry state for weeks, be resistant to some kind of disinfectant. So it's a very serious problem. the virulence factor of the mycobacteria is related to the cell wall, the lipids. And this is what I was saying that I could collect it. So it's taking, and you mentioned. So the cell wall prevents the fusion of the phagosome with the lysosome, and by blocking some molecule, is out interfering the fusion of the vesicles filled with nutrients. So this way, the bacteria blocks the function, the mechanism of the macrophage to kill the bacteria, but can survive inside and proliferate. Mycobacteria do not trigger apoptosis. This is the difference between this kind of mycobacteria and Mycobacteria avis. I didn't mention there are other kinds of mycobacteria. The most famous are Mycobacteria tuberculosis and Mycobacteria leprae. And this one induces apoptosis, which means that you have the proliferation inside the macrophages, and the apoptosis are going to help to release the mycobacteria for the external environment. And in the case of the mycobacteria tuberculosis, it doesn't trigger the apoptosis, but what happens is it induces the necrosis that is related to the production of TNF-alpha. So this is something related. So this is the sketch for it inhibits the apoptosis, but then there is a necrosis that allows to release the new bacteria. Now for the phylogenetic tree that I had to show, this is here you see that Mycobacteria tuberculosis, I don't know what's reading, you have 100 in the diversity of this branch of for Mycobacteria tuberculosis. This is the leprae, and then you have other carnies. And what you see is that it's genetically diverse with significant phenotype differences in clinical isolates. It has biogeographic population structure. So you have different strains associated to different regions. So probably if I succeed to do the study that we mentioned and compare to that one that you mentioned, it's not going to be the same because you have different mycobacteria in different regions. So this is for you, Marco, the genome. Sorry,
I don't understand what you said.
The strain is related to the geographic region. So if I succeed to study the strain in Olinda and compare to the one that you showed, that the study that was done in the other region that you mentioned, you are going to see that they are not the same. The diversity is related to the geographic regions too.
Yeah, are you sure? Has this been published?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Based on genomics?
No. Genotype? No. What I'm saying that this is, it's not a genomic study, but the strain they have, they are able to characterize, there is a long time. So they have evidences that the strains in Africa are different from the strains in Brazil, or different. You can have the same strain, but in general you have a difference.
Even in Canada, there's geographic structure. But I don't think that's your point. I think your point is that there could be multiple strains here, completely unrelated.
Yeah, in your town, you had three hotspots, for example. You can't say that there's three concurrent outbreaks going on, three variants in that community. That was my point. You don't know what the transmission is.
No, I know. I understood. But I'm saying also that you mentioned another study that was done.
In Canada, yes.
Yes, and I'm saying that probably if I do this study in Olinda, I'm going to find the difference between the strains in Olinda and in Canada, especially because the conditions of life are completely different. Okay, and I do believe that mycobacteria is related to the situation of the environment too. So, and this is the genome that was published in 1998. You have 4 million base pairs, almost 4,000 genes. 40% of these genes have already been characterized functionally, and you have 250 genes that are involved in the fat acid metabolism. And almost a fourth of this involved on the generation of oxycoat, which is the important thing in the mycobacteria. about the development of resistance antibiotics, it's very non-conclusive, the results that they have. They have tried to make sequence, they have found some difference between the drug resistant with the susceptible strain, and also for this multiple drug resistant. And but it's not conclusive, the difference, yet. They are in the very beginning. Actually, what you see is that it's a very old disease. It's a important problem, health problem, but there is only few studies in mycobacteria. There was a review, I forgot the name of the guy, I think Gagnon, he was mentioned this. He said that there is not too many people involved on the research on mycobacteria because it's not fancy, it's not fashionable, because it's an old disease. And actually, we need to do more.
It's also very difficult to work with.
Yeah, exactly.
Special conditions, laboratory conditions.
Exactly. Everything contributes to have only few studies.
Gagnon doesn't do experiments, he sequences genomes.
Sorry?
He doesn't do experiments.
No, but he was making a review about all the studies that have been done in mycobacteria. He was claiming that we need more experiments done to understand better this. Okay? So, what they say, I think I have this. What they have observed is the following. You have this drug susceptible strain, so then when you treat and the treatment is not adequate, then it can develop some kind of mutation that become drug resistant. But some mutations, they have detected some mutations that do not imply any cost for the mycobacteria in fitness. And they claim that probably you are going to observe what you have been observing in not bacteria, that you can have compensation in mutations and come back to the stage of and the change for the non-cost on fitness situation. This is what they claim. But they say that it's very, there are only few results about this. They cannot say that this is going to happen. What they have found is one of the mutations related to this antibiotics, which is this NIH, which INH with IO, and is the cat. They found this. It's a very common one. I don't know if I mentioned here. No, I think it's up here. But there's cat. It's KATG315 mutation. And in this case, they found that the drug resistant doesn't have any cost, fitness cost. This is very common in the clinical isolate. This is what they mention. This is the only results. And before I finish, we have done this, and for those which are interested, we can talk more about this later. And I'm also interested in HIV. We also did some simulation. I'm not going into the detail, but the idea was trying to reproduce what happens in the lymph nodes and try to reproduce this common pattern observed in infected patients, the three stages, and only for those to become. And what we consider is that you have a usual immune response to any virus, but the fast mutation and the high mutation rate and the fast replication rate together with the spatial localization allowed you to have this common pattern. And with the simulation that we did, these are the experimental results. This is one simulation, and this is the simulation for 500 samples. And here you also can describe different latency periods. So in the, this is I what we have shown by simulating the lymph nodes is this is related to the formation of syncytia, which are agglutination of cells, and as predicted by Kofan in 1986. So it's for those which are interested. So thank you for the attention. This is Recife. And this is my backyard. Okay. think everybody's hungry.
Yeah. Okay. It's so difficult to analyze the in-field model corresponding to your cell community model, because from that model probably you can estimate the parameters better with those which are...
Which model? You talk about tuberculosis?
Yes.
Why do you want to...
Because you don't have I did not understand all the reason, but you don't still have the quantitative agreement. And you say that you...
No, this is not related to the mean field.
No, I'm saying...
Or the parameters.
No?
No. This is related to the fact that for the moment we are simulating only one granuloma. And actually the experimental results, when you take the lungs...
Two figures, but they were almost, I don't know, the same, similar to me.
Which one?
Where you show that the experiment was 4 mice, and then you take every for simulations.
But I changes the way we are simulating. We are running a lot of simulation, and we are killing the simulation like with the you because for mice you do separate way. You don't average over the same sample. You understand? This is what we send different. But the agreement in the numbers, in the level of the number of bacteria, is not related to the situation of simulation or adjustment of parameters, because most of the parameters are estimated from the literature. It's related to the fact that when you kill the mice and you analyze the lungs, you have at least 5 or 7 or 10 granulomas. And what we are doing here, we are simulating only one.
You said that the drug-resistant strains, after they are left untreated, the growth rate becomes smaller, right? Then I would
repeat
that if you have a drug-resistant strain in a patient and you stop like treating the patient, a priori these drug-resistant strains is going to grow, the population is going to grow slower than the wild type.
This happens with the drug susceptible. Actually.
But it happens. No, my question then is, do you know what's happening? Like, is the generation time longer or the mortality rate of differential mortality of single bacteria is higher? I mean, what makes the growth rate dropping? I mean, one possible explanation might be the generation time is longer. Other possible
we didn't measure this, but we can do.
Yeah. Of bacteria is higher.
Yeah. As I told you, you are looking for from the immune system perspective. So you are right. Now we can analyze the data and analyze this kind of things. We didn't make this kind of measurement, but we can do this because you are looking for, as you see here, we have a very the probability of the macrophage to kill the bacteria, and then the replication time. But we are looking for elimination and containment and dissemination. We are not looking for that, but we can calculate. So thank you, it's a good idea.
Okay.
Thank you.